Welcome to the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com, your daily morning podcast, updating you on everything you need to know to win your fantasy baseball league. Here's your host, Jake Crumpler.
What's up, fantasy managers? Welcome back to another episode of the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and I'll be your host for this edition of the pod. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler and can find all of my work at CrumplerBaseball.com. Let's dive into everything baseball related from Sunday, August 2nd. We'll start it off, as always, with the transactions, injuries, news, and notes from around the league, kicking things off with the bad news as starting pitcher Lewinder Avila was placed on the 15-day IL with forearm tightness after he got blown up in Coors Field. Reliever Aaron Bummer was selected from the minors in a corresponding move, but we should see some more corresponding moves coming from the Royals as they look to address Avila's absence in their starting rotation. Next, we have starting pitcher Reynaldo Lopez, who was placed on the 15-day IL with knee inflammation. An MRI on Lopez's knee revealed no structural damage, so he shouldn't miss too much time, likely the minimum couple of weeks, and the Braves rotation could use reinforcements this season. Starting pitcher J.R. Richey was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move to start versus the Nationals. 4 innings, 4 hits, 2 earned, 3 walks, 4 strikeouts with 6 whiffs, 23% CSW across 81 pitches for Richey. His curveball, as usual, looked great, but everything else went sub 50% strikes, leading to 3 walks and 81 pitches through 4 frames and an early hook for J.R. Richey. He's not somebody that I look to trust in standard leagues. Now we'll take a look at some transactions, starting with the trade deadline news today. Monday, August 3rd is the trade deadline, but on Sunday we had a swath of moves that get us really excited for this final day of trades. We had the Tarek Skubal trade on Saturday, and on Sunday we had a number of important trades. We'll start with one of the least important, as starting pitcher Jameson Taillon was traded by the Cubs to the Blue Jays in exchange for a player to be named later or cash considerations. Taillon is Canadian and he will join Canada's team, which is pretty cool. It likely creates a six-man rotation in Toronto, and the 34-year-old Taillon is a free agent after this season, and with the Blue Jays at a 6.8% odds to make the playoffs according to FanGraphs, this is clearly just a move to take some pressure off of the youngsters in the rotation and to give the fans someone to root for, as Taillon is a Canadian. Next, starting pitcher Freddy Peralta was traded by the Mets to the Rays in exchange for 3 prospects, outfielder Aiden Smith, second baseman Emilian Petra, and starting pitcher Gary Gill Hill. We'll look at these prospects first. Smith is a 21-year-old outfielder. He was the Rays' number 15 prospect, and he's now the number 12 Mets prospect, according to MLB Pipeline. His prospect star has fallen a bit at high A. Aiden Smith has batted .215 with 10 homers, 14 steals, and a 73 WRC+. So clearly some power and speed, but a little bit struggles to make some contact there for Aiden Smith. They also got Emilian Petra, who was the Rays' number 27 prospect. He's now the Mets' number 15 prospect. He's a 23-year-old, and he was a 2024 second-round pick at high A and double A this year. Petra has batted .308 with 5 homers, 32 steals, and a 139 WRC+. So clearly a lot of potential there from Petra. We'll see what he does in the upper levels of the minors. What excites me most about him has been his plate discipline. 18% walk rate compared to a 10% strikeout rate for Emilian Petra. And they lastly got Gary Gill Hill. I mean, by the name alone, that's dope. That's a great addition to the Mets farm system. He was the Rays' number 26 prospect. He's now the Mets' number 17 prospect. He's a 21-year-old right-handed pitcher, and at high A and double A this year, 4.49 ERA, 1.38 whip with a 19% strikeout rate, but he did have a 5% walk rate, and Gary Gill Hill is more of a command arm than a stuff guy. So we'll see how that works out. Usually command focused righties aren't the most spectacular pitchers in the majors, but now we can talk about Freddy Peralta, and he supplements the Rays rotation, which was already pretty strong with Drew Rasmussen, Griffin Jacks, Ian Seymour, and Nick Martinez. But with Shane McClanahan hitting the IL with back tightness, reinforcements were needed did. Peralta's also struggled all year with a 4.99 ERA, so it's not really guaranteed that he's going to immediately return to the ace form that made him such an exciting addition to the Mets over the offseason. But I think both he and fantasy managers couldn't be happier with his new destination, as the Rays are famous for getting the most out of their players. Peralta will be a free agent after this season, so he's just a rental for the Rays. Next, we have reliever Huascar Brazoban, who was traded by the Mets to the White Sox in exchange for two prospects, starting pitcher Gabe Davis and reliever Zach Franklin. Davis is a 22-year-old right-handed pitcher at high A and double A this year, 5.81 ERA, 1.50 whip, 26% strikeout rate, 9% walk rate. He is an unranked prospect. So is Franklin, who's a 27-year-old right-handed reliever at AAA. He's had a 4.37 ERA with a 1.13 whip and a 32% strikeout rate alongside an 8% walk rate. So some pretty exciting strikeout numbers without the usual lack of control that comes with that in the minor league. So Franklin could be somebody that immediately supplements the Mets bullpen in future season. Brazoban, though, will head to the White Sox, and he won't be a free agent until after the 2029 campaign, but he's already 36 years old, so he's not one of those young, controllable relief pitchers. He's somebody that is likely towards the tail end of his career, but maybe not, because he's pitched to one of the best seasons of his career this year. 2.61 ERA, 1.01 whip, 23% strikeout rate, 11% walk rate for Brazoban. And he replaces the recently traded Sir Anthony Dominguez, who went to the Mariners in the Luis Castillo. And Brazoban will be the veteran righty in the White Sox bullpen that they were lacking after that Sir Anthony Dominguez trade. Next, we have first baseman Luis Garcia Jr., who was traded by the Nationals to the Yankees in exchange for four prospects. And you'll think right away, four prospects, wow, that's a lot to give up. But it was a lot of relievers, three relievers. The first one, reliever Jake Bird, was traded alongside starting pitcher Jack Siebert, reliever Ben Grable, and reliever Yovani Cruz. So the Nationals recognized their underperforming bullpen this year, one that looked terrible from the start of the season and really has lived up to those expectations, but it should be better next year with these additions. Bird is a 30-year-old right-handed pitcher, and he was actually acquired by the Yankees at last year's trade deadline from the Rockies. And anybody leaving Colorado has some potential to finally break out. Bird did not break out, and he hasn't been good this year. 5.93 ERA, 1.55 whip, 22% strikeout rate, 8% walk rate. But I see some potential for Bird on the Nationals. Siebert, though, is the headline of this deal. He was the Yankees' number 14 prospect. He's now the Nationals' number 14 prospect. And he's a 24-year-old righty who at high A and double A has pitched to a 4.03 ERA, 1.21 whip with a 27% strikeout rate and a 7% walk rate. Grable is the other guy that was ranked on the Yankees' top 30 prospects, according to MLB Pipeline. He was the number 25 Yankees prospect. He's now the Nationals' number 26 prospect. And Grable is a 24-year-old righty at high A and double A. Impressive numbers, to say the least. 2.45 ERA, 0.85 whip, a 38% strikeout rate, and just a 7% walk rate. Grable has a 70-grade fastball, so he should immediately supplement this Nationals bullpen heading into 2027. And so will Yovani Cruz, who was unranked but is now the Nationals' number 30 prospect. He's a 26-year-old right-handed pitcher, and he has appeared in the majors 5 1/3 innings this year. But at AAA, a 3.53 ERA, 1.26 whip, 33% strikeout rate, and a 9% walk rate. But he also has an incredible fastball, 70-grade, 100-mile-per-hour fastball from Yovani Cruz. So a lot of interesting arms here for the Nationals they got in exchange for Luis Garcia. And the Nationals looked like they had a shot at the playoffs a few weeks ago, but their odds have fallen down to 2.7%, which has turned them into sellers at the deadline. And after trading Curtis Meade to Boston, they dealt another bat to their rival, sending Garcia to the Bronx, where he'll split first base and DH duties with Ben Rice. And he could often sit against left-handed pitchers to get Paul Goldschmidt in the lineup. But regardless, Garcia is an awesome addition to this Yankees lineup. He also has one more year of control, so he will be on the Yankees in 2027. And he's in the middle of a breakout campaign, as he's batted 283 with 23 homers and a 134 WRC plus. And Luis Garcia Jr. supplements what will be a lethal lineup with Cody Bellinger and Aaron Judge when they return from the IL. So excited to see what this Yankees looks like, the Yankees lineup looks like when Garcia arrives and when the rest of the lineup is at full health and we see this lineup performing in the postseason. Next starting pitcher, Tyler Molly, was traded by the Giants to the Braves in exchange for starting pitcher Anthony Molina. He's a former Rockies swingman with a 6.89 ERA in 55 major league appearances. So not the most spectacular return for the Giants, but I guess they saw something in his increased fastball velocity this year. As for Molly, he's not performed that great this year, but recently he's displayed increased velocity. He struck out a bunch of batters in his last start, and Molly has been somebody in the past that has proven to be an all-star caliber pitcher, and he provides depth to a Braves rotation that is honestly super thin behind Chris Sale. There's lots of arms, but none of them are spectacular. We got Grant Holmes, Bryce Elder, and Martin Perez currently in the rotation, with youngsters J.R. Ritchie, Owen Murphy, A.J. Smith, Shaver, and Hurston Waldrep supporting, as well as Reynaldo Lopez, Spencer Schwellenbach, and Spencer Strider on the injured list. I don't think Molly is the huge addition we wanted to see for the Braves, but with so many options in this rotation, they should be able to figure things out for the postseason. The last trade we'll talk about is Kevin Gausman, who was traded by the Blue Jays to the Cubs in exchange for two prospects, shortstop Ty Southesine and outfielder Brett Bateman. They both are very interesting prospects. Southesine was the Cubs' number 13 prospect and will now be the Blue Jays' number 17 prospect. And he just turned 21 years old. So at low A and high A this year, he's batted .311 with 31 steals and a 126 WRC plus. And he's done that without hitting a home run. Southesine has zero home runs in his professional career thus far, but he's proven to have great contact ability, .311 average, 12% strikeout rate this year. He also has great plate discipline, 13% walk rate, which gets him on base enough to be able to maximize his speed. 31 stolen bases for Southesine this year, and maybe he has the ability to stick at shortstop. And Bateman is also somebody who is interesting. The outfielder was the Cubs' number 21 prospect and is now the Blue Jays' number 20 prospect. He's a 24-year-old, and at AAA this year, he's batted .312 with three homers, 20 steals, and a 126 WRC plus, while displaying incredible plate discipline with a 17% walk rate. So we'll see what the Blue Jays can do with Ty Southesine and Brett Bateman. But for the Cubs, they get Kevin Gausman, and the 35-year-old has had his worst season since pre-COVID in 2026, pitching to a 4.38 ERA, 1.29 whip, and a 24% strikeout rate. And he should see a boost pitching in front of the Cubs' elite defense, and I really hope he improves moving forward, because it's been really disappointing to see him struggle so much this year. And he's going to join Shota Imanaga and Matthew Boyd in the Cubs' rotation. And he's just a rental. He will be a free agent after this season. So hopefully he can propel the Cubs to some success in the playoffs this year. In terms of other transactions that don't involve trades, first baseman Spencer Horwitz was activated from the 10-day IL after missing over a month with a hamstring strain and a concussion. He will take over as the Pirates' everyday first baseman, which is good news for the Pirates, who just lost Ryan Hearn for the rest of the season to an injury. Outfielder Billy Cook was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move, but Spencer Horwitz back in the Pirates lineup. We also saw starting pitcher Robert Stock have his contract selected from the minors by the Mets to start versus the Marlins. He tossed five innings, allowing three hits and one run, walking nobody while striking out four. He induced 12 whiffs with 30% CSW across 70 pitches. And Stock is more well known for being a social media personality, but this 36-year-old has still got it. He's throwing harder with a super low arm angle, sitting 96 miles per hour with his four-seamer and up three ticks to 92 miles per hour on his cutter. His Razz Pack and trio of fastball variants combined for 10 whiffs and 72% strikes, and that could work for Stock, especially if one of his changeup or sweeper figures things out and becomes a legit whiff pitch to support that trio of fastballs. And I wonder if the Mets will let Stock stick in the rotation after this impressive performance on Sunday. Reliever Jonathan Pintaro was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. And lastly, outfielder Kyle Isbell was activated from the 10-day IL after missing nearly 2 months with a grade 3 tear of his plantar fascia in his foot. Isbell will be on the strong side of a center field platoon for the Royals, which will have Tyler Tolbert on the short side of that center field platoon, where when Tyler Tolbert when Tyler Tolbert shifts to center field, he will cede shortstop playing time to Andrew Velasquez versus left-handed pitchers. That will be until Bobby Witt Jr. returns, and he's actually expected to return from the 10-day IL tomorrow. He's missed the minimum time with lower back tightness. It'll actually be around 2 weeks by tomorrow, and Witt will reclaim everyday shortstop duties for the Royals. We're also likely to see third baseman Brendan Donovan activated from the 10-day IL tomorrow as well. He's missed nearly 3 months with a strained groin, and he's expected to take over as the everyday third baseman for the Mariners when he returns. Starting pitcher JT Ginn is also expected to be activated from the 15-day IL tomorrow. He's going to start in Cincinnati. He's missed around 3 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks with a finger blister, so hopefully he can command his breaking stuff in that start. And lastly, we have another starting pitcher returning. Kyle Harrison has been out for a month with forearm tightness, and he's expected to be activated from the 15-day IL on Wednesday to start versus the Pirates. Now we can take a look at our notable performances from Sunday, a day in which we had a full slate of 15 games. We'll start it off with our hitters, leading off with outfielder Jackson Merrill, who helped the Padres to win against the Giants, going 2 for 3 with a run, a home run, 2 runs batted in, a walk, and a steal to complete the combo meal. He's up to 16 homers and 22 steals on the season. Now the homer traveled 422 feet at 105 miles per hour, and Merrill looked pretty cooked to start the season as he continued his descent from his impressive debut campaign. He batted just .213 with 8 homers and a 71 WRC plus while fanning a quarter of the time through the end of June. He tried to make up for it by stealing more bases, exceeding his career high before the All-Star break with 18 steals. And while that kept him fantasy relevant, it didn't stop fantasy managers from being disappointed. But since the beginning of July, Merrill's reached another level, batting .308 with 8 homers and a WRC plus more than twice what it was in the season's first 3 months. The power influx has been supported by a 5% increase in his barrel rate up to 14%, but the strikeouts are still present, so maybe we don't see Merrill bat 300 the rest of the way. Regardless, he is someone who should be trusted to finish the season strong, setting himself up to be drafted highly once again. Next, we have first baseman Royce Lewis, who did all he could, but the Twins lost in Seattle. He went 2 for 4 with a run, a home run, and 3 runs batted in. It was his 12th homer of the year, and it traveled 402 feet at 103 miles per hour. And Lewis carried over his 2025 struggles into 2026, batting just .163 with 3 homers and a 54 WRC plus. And he struggled so mightily that by mid-May, he was optioned to the minors to figure things out. Lewis locked in at AAA, batting .333 with 10 homers and a 214 WRC plus in 15 games, and that was enough to earn him a ticket back to the majors. And Lewis has been incredible ever since returning, batting .254 with 9 homers and a 120 WRC plus. He's even chipped in 7 steals to make him a multi-category producer who deserves to be rostered universally. That was 7 steals just in that time frame. He's got 10 steals on the season. Lastly, we have catcher Joe Mack, who helped the Marlins to win in New York against the Mets. He went 2 for 3 with a run, a home run, and an RBI. The homer went 407 feet at 105 miles per hour, and it was his 11th home run of the year. And I think I undersold Mack when he got called up, labeling him a glove-first catcher that wouldn't be worth the attention in fantasy leagues because he'd have to compete with Liam Hicks for playing time behind the plate. But the 2021 first-round pick has proven to be much more than that, rediscovering his power stroke to belt 11 homers in just 66 games, which suggests that 25 homer power for a full season from Joe Mack. And it's supported by some decent Statcast metrics like a 10% barrel rate and a 74 mile per hour average bat speed. And combined with his elite defense, Joe Mack looks like a future perennial all-star, especially if he works on being more patient at the plate to boost his OBP north of 300. But if you'd like a breakdown of other notable hitting performances from Sunday, check out the Daily Batters Box article over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the mound and check out some notable starting pitching performances, opening with Jacob Mizorowski. You always got to cover him because he's been incredible this year. The best pitcher in baseball, did all he could, but the Brewers lost in LA against the Angels. He tossed 7 innings, allowing 2 hits and 2 earned runs, walking 1 while striking out 10. He induced 17 whiffs with 42% CSW across 83 pitches, and Mizorowski earned the King Cole by leading baseball with that 42% CSW. He also leads MLB with his 1.63 ERA, his 0.73 whip, his 145 batting average against, and his 195 strikeouts on the season. Incredible campaign from Jacob Mizorowski. Somebody else who is having a good season and had another great start on Sunday was Gavin Williams, who helped the Guardians to win against the Diamondbacks, tossing 5 2/3 innings, allowing one hit, no earned runs, one walk, and 10 strikeouts, inducing 21 whiffs with 36% CSW across 89 pitches. And I think Williams did have six innings in him before rain shut down the game and prevented him from re-entering the game afterwards. So disappointing we didn't see a little bit more from Williams, but we will certainly take this. He earned the gallows pole by leading baseball with those 21 whiffs, and he also leads the American League with his 178 strikeouts and his 139 innings pitched. And this was Williams' fifth straight game with 10 or more strikeouts. He had 11 strikeouts in three straight starts, 12 in his last start, and 10 more here in those five straight starts with 10 or more strikeouts. Ties Chris Sale for the second longest streak in MLB history. And if Williams gets one more, he will tie Clayton Kershaw's six-start streak from 2016 for the most consecutive starts with 10 or more strikeouts. And I'm really rooting for Williams to do so. Next, we have Kyle Freeland, who helped the Rockies to win against the Royals, tossing nine innings, allowing five hits and one run, walking two while striking out eight. He induced 19 whiffs with 32% CSW across 115 pitches, and there really has not been much for Freeland to cheer about this year, as he's allowed the most earned runs this season in baseball with 82 earned runs, but he locked in for a complete game on Sunday, and while he got lucky with 19 outs on 24 balls in play, this was a game of absolute curveball domination, as Freeland only threw 19 curveballs, but they induced 10 whiffs and racked up six strikeouts. I'm glad Freeland got a chance to prove he belongs in the majors, but it's not nearly enough for us to trust him in the future in the vast majority of fantasy baseball leagues. And lastly, we have Matthew Liberatore, who helped the Cardinals to win in Toronto, tossing six shutout innings, allowing just one hit and one walk while striking out seven. He induced 11 whiffs with 33% CSW across 85 pitches. And Liberatore has also struggled mightily this year, but he dropped his ERA below five with his best start of the year on Sunday. Liberatore was lucky to face an unspectacular Blue Jays lineup that has surprisingly recorded the second lowest OPS in MLB this year. And he was lucky to return 11 outs on 12 balls in play. Liberatore's command wasn't exceptional either, but when four seamers landed upstairs, they induced five whiffs and four strikeouts. And while sliders snuck into the zone for 38% CSW, they really weren't that spectacular. With Rocky Road up next, there's a potential for a sneaky deep league stream for Liberatore after his success here, but he's not somebody I want to trust in standard leagues. But if you'd like a breakdown of every single start from Sunday, give the Plus Pitch podcast a listen and check out Nick's daily SP roundup over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the bullpen and check out the relievers that got saves and the closers that pitched outside of save situations or blew their saves. Starting with the former, Adrian Morejon had a perfect four-out save, his second of the year. Maybe the Padres are setting Morejon up to be traded today, or maybe they were giving Mason Miller a day off after he threw 30 pitches on Saturday. Raisel Iglesias recorded his 24th save with a hitless ninth. Pete Fairbanks had a hitless ninth for his 17th save. AJ Bluebaugh had a perfect four-out save with a four-run lead for his first save of the year. David Bednar had a hitless four-out save for his 24th save, and Ryan Zephyrjohn had a scoreless five-out save for his fourth save of the year. In terms of closers to pitch outside of save situations or blow their saves, Eric Miller got the final out of the eighth inning with the Giants down by one. Louis Varlin pitched the ninth in a tie game, and he allowed four runs, only one of which was earned, but he took his fourth loss in the process. Riley O'Brien pitched a scoreless ninth after the Cardinals blew it open against Varlin, and O'Brien locked down that win for the Cardinals. Cade Smith recorded the final four outs with a five-run lead. He hadn't pitched since Wednesday, and the Guardians are off today, so this was a maintenance outing for Cade Smith. Grant Taylor recorded five outs across the seventh and eighth with a five-run lead. Devin Williams allowed a run while pitching the ninth down by one. The Mets are off today, so they were just giving Williams a chance to get some work. Andres Munoz served up a game-tying solo shot to blow his sixth save, but he earned his fifth win when the Mariners walked it off against Yoendris Gomez, who allowed three hits and a run to take his first loss. But if you'd like more information on relief pitchers, check out Rick Graham's daily articles over on pitcherlist.com. And before we look forward to today's games, we're going to take a quick break. Now I'll look forward to Monday, August 3rd, a day in which we'll have just 8 games on the slate. My matchup of the day is Matthew Boyd versus Justin Wroblewski. We got a pair of southpaws squaring off, 2 playoff-bound teams, the Cubs versus the Dodgers. This should be a pretty decent matchup, Boyd versus Wroblewski. In terms of probable starters, we've got 2 guys in the auto starts tier, Cam Schlittler versus the Cardinals and Logan Webb in San Diego. I don't think that's the case. I wrote at St. Louis, and I don't know how I messed that one up, but it'll be Logan Webb versus somebody and Cam Schlittler versus the Cardinals. Our probably starts tier has 2 guys, and our questionable starts tier has 4, and that's where we'll find our streamer of the day in Brandon Pfaadt in the Bronx. Brandon Pfaadt has been not great this year, but the Yankees lineup is, I guess, one that he will have the possibility of taking down. There just aren't too many streaming options on Sunday, and Brandon Pfaadt has proven capable with a deep arsenal that he can sort of get a bunch of weak contact and trust his defense to get him through at least 5 or 6 frames. I'd also keep an eye out for Christian Javier versus the Blue Jays. He looked great in bulk relief in his last start. The Blue Jays lineup is awful right now, so Javier is somebody that could be a high upside play on Monday. In terms of hitter suggestions, I go for Giants hitters versus Cal Quantrill. That's right. Logan Webb is going to be in Texas in Globe Life Field. I like Giants hitters versus Cal Quantrill in Globe Life Field. Quantrill is not one of the best starters in baseball. I think the Giants hitters are going to take advantage of that. I'd also target Phillies hitters versus Trevor Williams in Citizens Bank Park. Williams is making his first start of the year, and even when at his best, he was never somebody that we really thought of as one of the best starters in baseball. I think Phillies hitters will tee off against Trevor Williams. And lastly, I target Rays and Rockies hitters in Coors Field. We'll see Ian Seymour square off against Michael Lorenzen in that one. And now we'll close things out with our relievers to watch. Every closer should be available on the short slate on Monday. So just set your lineup as usual. But that'll do it for today's episode of the First Pitch Podcast. Make sure to head on over to pitcherlist.com to check out all of the great articles and features we have on the site, and sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro to gain access to the Discord and to support the Pitcher List staff. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler, where I do daily SP streamers and I break down every single start via the Pitcher List Stats player cards. Tune into YouTube tomorrow and every day for a new installment of the podcast. I'll be breaking down all of Monday's trades tomorrow morning. And make sure to enjoy the day as we are blessed with another day of baseball.
This has been the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, rate us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter at PitcherList, and help support what we do by joining our Discord with PitcherList Plus at PitcherList.com/plus.